bid them to come to King's Landing and pledge their fealty to Joffrey when he takes his throne. If they do that, why then we shall know there is no taint in your blood, and when you come into the flower of your womanhood, you shall wed the king in the great sept of Baelor before the eyes of gods and men. Wed the king? The words made her breath come faster, yet still Sansa hesitated. Perhaps, if I might see my father, talk to him about treason, Lord Varys hinted. You disappoint me, Sansa, the queen said, with eyes gone hard as stones. We've told you of your father's crimes. If you are truly as loyal as you say, why should you want to see him? I only meant... Sansa felt her eyes grow wet. He's not... Please, he hasn't been hurt or... Lord Eddard has not been harmed, the queen said. But what's to become of him?
That is a matter for the king to decide, Grand Maester Pycelle announced ponderously.
The king? Sansa blinked back her tears. Joffrey was the king now, she thought. Her gallant prince would never hurt her father, no matter what he might have done. If she went to him and pleaded for mercy, she was certain he'd listen. He had to listen. He loved her. Even the queen said so. Joff would need to punish father. The lords would expect it, but perhaps he could send him back to Winterfell or exile him to one of the free cities across the narrow seas. It would only have to be for a few years. Why, then she and Joffrey would be married, and once she was queen, she could persuade Joff to bring father back and grant him a pardon. Only, if Mother or Rob did anything treasonous, called the banners, or refused to swear fealty or anything, it would all go wrong. Her Joffrey was good and kind, she knew it in her heart, but a king had to be stern with rebels. She had to make them understand, she had to. I'll write the letters, Sansa told them. With a smile as warm as the sunrise, Cersei Lannister leaned close and kissed her gently on the cheek. I knew you would. Joffrey will be so proud when I tell him what courage and good sense you've shown here today. In the end, she wrote four letters. To her mother, the Lady Catelyn Stark, to her brothers at Winterfell, and to her aunt and her grandfather as well. Lady Lysa Arryn of the Eyrie and Lord Hoster Tully of Riverrun. By the time she had done, her fingers were cramped and stiff and stained with ink. Varys had her father's seal. She warmed the pale white beeswax over a candle, poured it carefully, and watched as the eunuch stamped each letter with the dire wolf of House Stark. Jane Poole and all her things were gone when Sir Mandon Moore returned Sansa to the High Tower of Maegor's Holdfast. No more weeping, she thought gratefully, yet somehow it seemed colder. With Jane gone, even after she'd built a fire. She pulled a chair close to the hearth, took down one of her favourite books, and lost herself in the stories of Florian and Jonquil, of Lady Shelley and the Rainbow Knight, of valiant Prince Aemon and his doomed love for his brother's queen. It was not until later that night, as she was drifting off to sleep, that Sansa realised that she had forgotten to ask about her sister. John.
Arthur, announced Sir Jeremy Riker, the Underdart, and this one was Jafer Flyers.
He turned the corpse over with his foot, and the dead white face stared up at the overcast sky with blue, blue eyes.
They were Ben Stark's men, both of them.
My uncle's men, John thought, numbly. He remembered how he'd pleaded to ride with them. Gods, I was such a green boy. If he'd taken me, it might be me lying there. Jafer's right wrist ended in the ruin of torn flesh and splintered bone left by ghost jaws. His right hand was floating in a jar of vinegar back in Maester Aemon's tower. His left hand, still at the end of his arm, was as black as his cloak.
"God's have mercy," the old bear muttered.
He swung down from his garron, handed his reins to John. The morning was unnaturally warm. Beads of sweat dotted the Lord Commander's broad forehead like dew on a melon. His horse was nervous, rolling her eyes, backing away from the dead men as far as her lead would allow. John led her off a few paces, fighting to keep her from bolting. The horses did not like the feel of this place. For that matter, neither did John. The dogs liked it least of all. Ghost had led the party here. The pack of hounds had been useless. When Bass, the kennel master, had tried to get them to take the scent from the severed hand, they had all gone wild, yowling and barking, fighting to get away. Even now they were snarling and whimpering by turns, pulling at their leashes, while Chet cursed them for curs. "It's only a wood," John told himself, "and they're only dead men." He had seen dead men before. Last night he had dreamt the Winterfell dream again. He was wandering the empty castle, searching for his father, descending into the crypts. Only this time the dream had gone further than before. In the dark he'd heard the scrape of stone on stone, and when he turned he saw that the vaults were opening, one after the other, as the dead kings came stumbling from their coal-black graves. John had woken in pitch dark, his heart hammering. Even when Ghost leapt up on the bed to nuzzle to his face, he could not shake the deep sense of terror. He dared not go back to sleep. Instead, he had climbed the wall and walked, restless, until he saw the light of dawn off to the east. "It was only a dream. I am a brother of the Night's Watch now, not a frightened boy." Samwell Tarley huddled beneath the trees, half-hidden behind the horses. His round, fat face was the colour of curdled milk. So far he had not lurched off to the woods to retch, but he had not so much as glanced at the dead man either.
"I can't look," he whispered miserably.
"You have to look," John told him, keeping his voice low so the others would not hear. "Maester Aemon sent you to be his eyes, didn't he? What good are eyes if they're shot?"
"Yes, but I'm such a coward, John."
John put a hand on Sam's shoulder. "We have a dozen rangers with us, and the dogs, even Ghost. No one will hurt you, Sam. Go ahead and look." "The first look is the hardest." Sam gave a tremulous nod, working up his courage with a visible effort. Slowly, he swiveled his head. His eyes widened, but John held his arm so he could not turn away.
"Sir Jeremy," the old bear said gruffly, "Ben Stark had 6 men with him when he rode from the wall. Where are the others?"
Sir Jeremy shook his head.
"Would that I knew."
Plainly, Mormont was not pleased with that answer.
"2 of our brothers butchered almost within sight of the wall, yet your rangers heard nothing, saw nothing. Is this what the Night's Watch has fallen to? Do we still sweep these woods?"
Yes, my lord, but do we still mount watches?
We do, but this man wears a hunting horn."
Mormont pointed at Arthur.
"Must I suppose that he died without sounding it? Or have your rangers all gone deaf as well as blind?"
Sir Jeremy bristled, his face taunt with anger.
"No horn was blown, my lord, or my rangers would have heard it. I do not have sufficient men to mount as many patrols as I should like, and since Benjamin was lost we have stayed closer to the wall than we were wont to do before, by your own command."
The old bear grunted.
"Yes, well, be that as it may."
He made an impatient gesture.
"Tell me how they died."
Squatting beside the dead man he had named Jaffer Flowers, Sir Jeremy grasped the head by the scalp. The hair came out between his fingers, brittle as straw. The knight cursed and shoved at the face with the heel of his hand. A great gash in the side of the corpse's neck opened like a mouth, crusted with dry blood.
Only a few ropes of pale tendon still attached the head to the neck.
This was done with an axe.
"Oi," muttered Diwan, the old forester. "It'd be like the axe that Utter carried, me lord."
John could feel his breakfast churning in his belly, but he pressed his lips together and made himself look at the second body. Utter had been a big, ugly man, and he made a big, ugly corpse. No axe was in evidence. John remembered Utter. He had been the one bellowing the bawdy song as the rangers rode out. His singing days were done. His flesh was blanched white as milk. Everywhere but his hands. His hands were black like Japheth's. Blossoms of hard, cracked blood decorated the mortal wounds that covered him like a rash, breast and groin and throat. Yet his eyes were still open. They stared up at the sky, blue as sapphires. Sir Jeremy stood.
The wildlings have access too.
Mormont rounded on him.
So you believe this is Manse Raider's work, hm? This close to the wall?
Or who else, my lord?
John could have told him. He knew, they all knew. Yet no man of them would say the words.
The others are only a story, a tale to make children shiver. If they ever lived at all, they were gone 8,000 years.
Even the thought made him feel foolish. He was a man grown now, a black brother of the Night's Watch, not the boy who once sat at Old Nan's feet with Bran and Rob and Arya. Yet Lord Commander Mormont gave a snort.
If Bran Stark had come under a wilding attack, a half-day's ride from Castle Black, he would return for more men, chase the killers through all seven hells, and brought me back their heads.
Unless he was slain as well,
Sir Jeremy insisted. The words hurt, even now. It had been so long it seemed folly to cling to the hope that Ben Stark was still alive. But Jon Snow was nothing if not stubborn.
It has been close on half a year since Benjen left us, my lord,
Sir Jeremy went on.
The forest is fast. The wildlings might have fallen on him anywhere. I'd wager these two were the last survivors of his party on their way back to us. But the enemy caught them before they could reach the safety of the wall. The corpses are still fresh. These men cannot have been dead more than a day.
No!
Samuel Tarly squeaked. John was startled. Sam's nervous, high-pitched voice was the last he would have expected to hear. The fat boy was frightened of the officers, and Sir Jeremy was not known for his patience.
"I did not ask for your views, boy,"
Riker said coldly. "Let him speak, sir," John blurted. Mormont's eyes flicked from Sam to John and back again.
"If the lad has something to say, I'll hear him. Come closer, boy. We can't see you behind those horses."
Sam edged past John and the Garrons, sweating profusely.
My lord, it can't be a day, or, look, the blood.
Yes, Mormont growled impatiently. Blood? What of it?
He soils his small clothes at the sight of it,
Chet shouted out, and the rangers laughed. Sam mopped at the sweat on his brow.
You can see where Ghost, John's direwolf, you can see where he tore off the man's hand. And yet, the stump hasn't bled. Look.
He waved a hand.
My father, Lord Randall, he made me watch him dress animals sometimes when, after...
Sam shook his head from side to side, his chins quivering. Now that he had looked at the bodies, he could not seem to look away.
A fresh kill, the blood would still flow, my lords. Later... It would be clotted like a jelly, thick and...
He looked as if he was going to be sick.
This man, look at the wrist, it's all crusty, dry, like...
John saw at once what Sam meant. He could see the torn veins in the dead man's wrist, iron worms in the pale flesh.
His blood was a black dust, yet Jeremy Riker was unconvinced.
If they'd been dead much longer than a day, they'd be ripe by now, boy. They don't even smell.
Dywin, the gnarled old forester, who'd like to boast that he could smell snow coming on, sidled closer to the corpses and took a whiff.
Well, they're no pansy flowers, but, my lord, as the truth of it, there's no corpse stink.
They are rotting,
Sam pointed, his fat finger shaking only a little.
Look, there's no maggots or worms or anything. They've been lying here in the woods, but they haven't been chewed or eaten by animals. Only ghosts. Otherwise, they're...
Untouched, John said softly. And ghost is different. The dogs and the horses won't go near them. The rangers exchanged glances. They could see it was true. Every man of them. Mormon frowned, glancing from the corpses to the dogs.
Chet, bring the hounds closer.
Chet tried, cursing, yanking on the leashes, giving one animal a lick of his boot. Most of the dogs just whimpered and planted their feet. He tried dragging one. The bitch resisted, growling and squirming as if to escape her collar. Finally, she lunged at him. Chet dropped the leash and stumbled backwards. The dog leapt over him and bounded off into the trees.
This is all wrong, Sam Tarly said earnestly. The blood, there's bloodstains on the clothes and their flesh, dry and hard, but there's none on the ground, or anywhere. With those...
Sam made himself swallow, took a deep breath.
With those wounds, terrible wounds, there should be blood all over, shouldn't there?
Dywin sucked at his wooden teeth.
Might be they didn't die here. Might be someone brought them and left them for us. A warning, as like.
The old forester peered down suspiciously.
And might be I'm a fool. But I don't know that Uther never had no blue eyes afore.
Sir Jeremy looked startled.
Neither do flowers,
he blurted, turning to stare at the dead man. A silence fell over the wood. For a moment, all they heard was Sam's heavy breathing and the wet sound of Dywin sucking on his teeth. John squatted beside Ghost.
Burn them,
someone whispered. One of the rangers. John could not have said who.
Yes, burn them,
a second voice urged. The old bear gave a stubborn shake of his head.
Not yet. I want Maester Aemon to look at them. We'll bring them back to the wall.
Some commands are more easily given than obeyed. They wrapped the dead men in cloaks, but when Hake and Dywin tried to tie one onto a horse, the animal went mad, screaming and rearing, lashing out with its hooves, even biting at Ketta when he ran to help. The rangers had no better luck with the other Garrons. Not even the most placid wanted any part of these burdens. In the end, they were forced to hack off branches and fashion crude slings to carry the corpses back on foot. It was well past midday by the time they started back.
I will have these woods searched,
Mormont commanded Sir Jeremy as they set out.
Every tree, every rock, every bush, and every foot of muddy ground within 10 leagues of here. Use all the men you have, and if you do not have enough, borrow hunters and foresters from the Stuarts. If Ben and the others are out there, dead or alive, I will have them found. And if there is anyone else in these woods, I will know of it. You are to track them and take them, alive if possible. Is that understood?
It is, my lord,
Sir Jeremy said.
It will be done.
After that, Mormont rode in silence, brooding. John followed close behind him. As the Lord Commander Stuart, that was his place. The day was grey, damp, overcast, the sort of day
that made you wish for rain. No wind stirred the wood. The air hung humid and heavy, and John's clothes clung to his skin. It was warm, too warm. The wall was weeping copiously, had been weeping for days, and sometimes John even imagined it was shrinking. The old men called this weather Spirit Summer, and said it meant the season was giving up its ghosts at last. After this, the cold would come, they warned, and a long summer always meant a long winter. The summer had lasted 10 years. John had been a babe in arms when it began. Ghost ran with them for a time, and then vanished among the trees. Without the direwolf, John felt almost naked. He found himself glancing at every shadow with unease. Unbidden, he thought back to the tales that old Nan used to tell them when he was a boy at Winterfell. He could almost hear her voice again, and the click, click, click of her needles.
In the darkness, the others come riding, she used to say, dropping her voice lower and lower. Cold and dead they were, and they hated iron and fire and the touch of the sun, and every living creature with hot blood in its veins, holdfasts and cities, and kingdoms of men all fell before them as they moved south on pale, dead horses, leading hosts of the slain. They fed their dead servants on the flesh of human children.
When he caught his first glimpse of the wall, looming above the tops of an ancient gnarled oak, John was vastly relieved. Mormont reined up suddenly and turned in his saddle. Tarly, he barked, come here. John saw the start of fright on Sam's face as he lumbered up on his mare. Doubtless, he thought, he was in trouble.
You're fat, but you're not stupid, boy,
the old bear said gruffly.
You did well back there, and you, Snow.
Sam blushed a vivid crimson and tripped over his own tongue as he tried to stammer out a courtesy. John had to smile. When they emerged from under the trees, Mormont spurred his tough little Garen to a trot. Ghost came streaking out of the woods to meet them, licking his chops, his muzzle red from prey. High above, the men on the wall saw the column approaching. John heard the deep, throaty call of the watchman's great horn, calling out across the miles, a single long blast that shuddered through the trees and echoed off the ice. The sound faded slowly to silence. One blast meant rangers returning, and John thought, I was a ranger, for one day at least. Whatever may come, they can't take that away from me. Bowen Marsh was waiting at the first gate as they led the Garrons through the icy tunnel. The Lord Steward was red-faced and agitated. My lord, he blurted at Mormont as he swung open the iron bars, there's been a bird. You must come at once.
What is it, men?
Mormont said gruffly. Curiously, Marsh glanced at John before he answered. Maester Aemon has a letter. He's waiting in your cellar.
Very well, John. Sit on my horse and tell Sir Jeremy to put the dead men in a storeroom until the maester is ready for them.
Mormont strode away, grumbling. As they led their horses back to the stable, John was uncomfortably aware that people were watching him. Sir Alistair Thorne was drilling his boys in the yard, but he broke off to stare at John, a faint half-smile on his lips. One-armed Donald Noy stood in the door of the armory.
"Guards be with you, Snow,"
he called out. "Something's wrong," John thought. "Something's very wrong." The dead men were carried to one of the storerooms along the base of the wall, a dark coal cell chiseled from the ice and used to keep meat and grain, and sometimes even beer. John saw the Mormont's horse was fed and watered and groomed before he took care of his own. Afterwards he sought out his friends. Gren and Toad were on watch, but he found Pip in the common hall.
"What's happened?" he asked.
Pip lowered his voice. "The king's dead."